everybody, welcome back to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously, but who does like snacks.
And who does like poutine.
I am half poutine. Half of my body is poutine.
After you left me in the airport and I claimed that I was getting on my flight, it turned out I transferred to a different flight and I left the airport to go back to go back to the poutine bar. So,
did you really leave the airport?
No, I did not.
Oh, but man,
it's a good story.
What that would have been.
I know, right?
Man,
no.
I didn't realize that the Rogers Center, where the Toronto Blue Jays play baseball, I didn't realize it was a James Beard Award winning restaurant. But it must be because the poutine there is out of this world.
Just outrageous.
I'm a bit of a foodie. Never thought my favorite food ever would be in a baseball stadium,
served but in a cardboard box. Like an Amazon shipment.
It's like a paper spoon. It was so good. Now I am made mostly of salt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let me get that gout going pretty quickly here as it all settles into my toenails.
Just got to take a little pin. You pop the foot and all the gravy comes out. Straight poutine gravy. And then if you do that over a box of fries, more poutine.
Mm-hmm. It's like when your yard inflatables, like your Halloween yard inflatables, get rained on, and it's just like all water in the bottom, and you just like go out there with the little pin and just pop it, and kids are like, oh, just like Dad's toes. Yep, just like Dad's toes.
Except this one's clear. That's weird.
Interesting.
Hmm. So you happy to be back?
I do happen to be back. Yeah. This is not an elaborate ruse of a basement background here.
I said, are you happy to be back?
Am I happy to be back?
Yeah.
Boy, no. Not even a little.
Remember sleeping past 5:30?
I do remember sleeping past 5:30. Even with like a 210-pound man snoring literally his brains out 4 feet from me, still would go back right now.
It's amazing. And I don't know how I truly thought we were going to have to call an ambulance for Chad, the way he was snoring. I was across the apartment and behind a closed door, and I was very concerned. I could hear him so far and so clearly. I thought, oh my God, struggling, he's not okay.
Struggling to live for hours at a time.
But being in bed felt so nice that I thought we'll figure it out in the morning.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, if he makes it, he makes it. If he dies, he dies. You know?
Yeah. 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 That's why we have everyone who comes on this trip sign a waiver.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to come on BBRT, you got to sign the waiver. I went to pick up Maple and Ivy from daycare yesterday, and Maple's daycare teacher pulled me aside, and she was like, so Maple told me you were out of town for the weekend. And I said, yeah. She goes, and then I heard from one of the other kids' dads, who works at my college, that you went to Toronto by yourself. And I said, well, sort of, you know, with friends, you know, it's an annual thing that we do. We go to baseball stadiums. And she goes, so you just went and your family was here and you went alone. And I said, yeah. And she goes, wow, that must have been so good. And I'm starting to worry that maybe she really needs a vacation. The longing in her eyes was transcendent, really. It's really something.
You're going to show up like on Thursday and they're going to say, oh, guess which teacher ran away? You're like, I know exactly which teacher ran away. You can give me zero guesses.
Very easy. Very easy. Oh, man. Well, we are back. We saw no ghosts. We thought about going to look at some haunted places, but they were several blocks away, and we thought, that's too far. Oh,
so much beer in my stomach, so much poutine on my lips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no way I was going to make it that far.
No, didn't happen. So sorry, everyone, about that. But we are back with a brand new story today. But before we get into it, we should wish a happy birthday to listener Sarah Anderson. Her birthday was on September 20th, so it's a few days away as we're recording. It'll be too late by the time this comes out. But Sarah is, she's a longtime listener. She is a Ghost Plus member, and she reached out to see if we could wish her happy birthday. And I thought we'd be happy to do that.
So excited.
So happy birthday, Sarah.
Happy birthday, Sarah.
that maybe be nice to do like a like an impromptu like back and forth birthday poem.
Okay. Yeah.
Like you start? Or you want me to start?
A limerick?
Oh boy. Okay. I didn't know we were gonna go structured. All right. Yeah.
I mean, I think we kind of owe it to her.
Yeah. Okay. I'll go first.
Mm-hmm.
There once was a woman named Sarah. It's going pretty well so far.
And her subscriptions were really quite nice.
We're going to sidebar real quick. Do you know how a limerick works? I think there's an AABBA.
No, no.
Is that right? Let's see. AABBA. That's correct. So if you can come up with where they're at. Or if you want, I can start over again and I can do a subscription. I can do where that rhymes with nice.
I was doing ABCCB is what I was doing. That's my preferred limerick structure.
That's a German limerick style.
I believe ABCCB is a valid limerick structure. So
I don't think so. Well,
ABAAB. That's what I was thinking of.
If we have any limerickists out there who could really weigh on this, that'd be great. Limericists?
Anyway, you start over again.
Okay. Take it from the top. Did you go to rhymezone.com?
No, I did not. The AI overview took me to rhymezone.com. Okay.
All right, here we go. All right, ready? There once was a woman named Sarah.
Whose favorite baseball player was, of course, Yogi Berra.
She had a big birthday.
God damn it. And a real realize your worth day.
And somehow she looked like Che Guevara.
I'm sorry for using last names in most of those lines, Sarah, but your name doesn't rhyme with anything. I'm really sorry.
Yeah, the word Sarah is very difficult, famously, to find rhymes for. Mm-hmm. But we hope you had a great birthday, Sarah. Thanks for being such a great listener, and sorry for the poem. Oh, man. All right. Well, with that successfully out of the way, you ready for a ghost story?
Of course.
Jarring. Elizabeth Griscom was born in Gloucester City, New Jersey on January
4th. January 4th. That's
been happening all day. I have not said one single sentence that sounded right all day today.
And you wanted to sing a limerick. I don't get it.
On January 1st, 1752... Elizabeth was the eighth of 17 children.
1752.
Mm-hmm.
That was before the invention of like everything.
That's everything except childbirth. Do you want to guess how many of those 17 children survived?
She was the eighth of 17?
She was the eighth of 17, but that doesn't mean she was the eighth one to live.
Just the eighth one to...
Yeah, in order. Slide on out of that chute. I mean,
another.
If I'm reading your hand gestures correctly,
another real selling point for the YouTube clip here, guys, is to see me and Clayton's hand gestures of what birth looks like. You know, like on the Schlitterbahn. That's really what like right at the end. God damn.
Hey, speaking of YouTube, by the way, a few weeks ago I was drinking from this same mug on YouTube, and one of our listeners, I think it was Jen Jones, made a comment on our YouTube channel about wondering what kind of mug this was. This is a mug from New Orleans. Maybe you can see if I do this on New Orleans trip, and it's red. It's got all kinds of like black and white voodoo and gree-gree designs all over it. Mm-hmm. It's got bones. It's got a hat. It's got a moon. It's got scary stuff.
Tough to drink out of a cup with a hat, but you managed to do it. I'm not really sure how.
I do it every day. And if you want one, you can go to New Orleans, I guess. That's where I got mine. Godspeed. Anyway, okay, so out of 17, how many do you think survived childhood?
I'm going to go with 6.
Nine.
Nine. Oh, that's not bad.
That's a blessed pretty family. Good.
Were they rich? Yeah.
Probably. They must have been.
Yeah. We know their name like 300 years later, so I'm going to say, they're probably rich.
Probably pretty rich. I will share one morbid fact about these children.
Mm-hmm. There we go. I was going to ask you if you wanted me to make one up, but you've already got a button.
Do you want to try another one?
Sure.
Okay. I will share one morbid fact.
Aww.
pretty good.
It's pretty good, actually. Yeah.
Print. Yeah. Elizabeth had a sister named Sarah. All right. Now, Sarah was named after another sister named Sarah, who had died before Elizabeth and Sarah were born.
Right. Was her favorite baseball player Yogi Berra as well?
I think so.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Real critical that Jeremy cuts this episode together the right way, because otherwise that joke is not funny for anybody.
Oh yeah, if Jeremy decides that the whole birthday thing was a mistake, it's gonna be bad. So yeah, so her sister Sarah was named after another Sarah who didn't make it. So it's just very sad. They had eight children who died when they were 2-3 years old, and one of them they're like, "Well, we really like that name,
and we want to get that she's back not at least, I guess. Using it anymore."
I mean. But is that like that's not a Sarah Jr., but that could be, it's like a Sarah the second.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is that what you call her, I think?
I think so. Sarah 2.
Sarah, yeah. Sarah point one. Well, maybe Sarah point one.
Maybe not Sarah 2. That seems less good.
That's probably bad. Anyway, so that's Elizabeth's early life. And, oh, no, her family must not be rich because they're Quakers.
Oh.
And when Elizabeth was 3 years old, her parents, named Samuel and Rebecca, they moved to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Mm.
Big, big Quaker town.
Absolutely.
Is Pennsylvania. Now, Elizabeth's great aunt, Sarah Elizabeth Ann Griscom, taught her how to sew.
Mm.
And as a Quaker, that skill comes in pretty handy.
Mm. So, I'm sorry. Can we just get a quick rundown on the names here?
Yes.
Because I think it's just three names, but probably more than three people are occupying these three names, right?
Well, there's a Sarah who's dead.
Right.
There's a Sarah who's not dead.
Right.
There's another Sarah who's not dead, who is old.
Right.
There's a Rebecca, there's a Samuel, and there's an Elizabeth.
Right. And there's also a Sarah Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah. Sarah Elizabeth is the old Sarah who's not dead.
Okay.
Good.
That's fine. I got to get pins in all these post-it notes here.
Our main character is Elizabeth.
Okay.
Her dad's sister, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
No, her dad's aunt, I believe, is Sarah Elizabeth Ann Griscom.
Mm-hmm.
And so she is named presumably after Elizabeth. And then the dead Sarah and the live Sarah are also presumably named after this Sarah.
Who's probably getting really annoyed at all these dead children being named after her. I keep knitting blankets for every kid you name after me. And... I don't know.
That's probably why they kept using the name Sarah. This is a beautiful blanket. We do not want it to go to waste.
It is so cold.
We'll have another Sarah.
It is so cold in the winter up here.
Yeah.
We can keep popping these guys out.
We'll get a Sarah for you.
Yeah.
Eventually we'll get another one. So Elizabeth takes to sewing, taught by her great aunt, and she's really good at it. She's very talented with a needle and thread. She attends a Quaker school, and when she was done there, her father apprenticed her to a popular upholsterer whose name was either John or William Webster.
Again, that's just, it's a big dartboard with only two regions on it. And he just threw one.
The records are tough in the 1700s. Mm. And also, there were only like 9 people in America at this time.
They were splitting three names.
And so, yeah, so it doesn't matter. I think it's John. History seems to be on the side of John mostly. Mm-hmm. So John Webster probably. So under Webster's tutelage, Elizabeth learns how to make and repair curtains, tablecloths, bed covers, rugs, all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She becomes a very skilled seamstress and a very skilled upholsterer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while she's apprenticing.
Yes.
While she's apprenticing with Webster, Elizabeth falls in love with another apprentice of Webster's, a man whose name we do definitely know is John Ross. Okay. Definitely not William Ross.
Right, yeah. Definitely not William, definitely not John William Ross or William John Ross. Just John Ross this time.
Just John Ross.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So she falls in love with a man named John Ross. Now, this is a problem because John is the son of the former assistant rector of Christ Church.
Oh, man.
Gonna make a rector joke.
I was gonna say he's the assistant rector. He's not the assistant to the rector.
He's assistant rector, and which means he's not a Quaker,
right?
So they don't like that. Elizabeth's parents say absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
You must only marry a Quaker.
They say rector damn near killed her.
There it is. So they say no, but Elizabeth is totally in love. And so on November 4th, 1773, when Elizabeth was 21 years old, she and John, they run off to Hug's Tavern.
Ooh.
And do a, for the hugging, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The marital hugging.
Mm-hmm.
Hug's Tavern in back in Gloucester City, where she's from, back in New Jersey.
I think that's all Quakers were allowed to do, actually. It's probably why they called it that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why you wanted to marry someone who's good with like sewing and stuff and an upholsterer, because he's really good with scissors. And so he's
like, you got a hole in the burlap sack.
Secret hole in the burlap sack. Exactly. So Elizabeth knows what she's doing.
She knows. Burlap is getting slightly less scratchy. Yes. Can you hold still? Just like very still, actually.
They go to Hug's Tavern.
I can't quite seem to get the potato smell out of mine, but it's not bothering me anymore. It's not.
Out of your what?
Out of my
which? Yeah. Oh, man. So they run to Hug's Tavern in Gloucester City, where they are married in secret, and Elizabeth Griscom becomes Elizabeth Ross. Of course, it should be noted here that everyone who knows her doesn't call her by her full name. They call her by her nickname, Betsy.
Betsy Ross.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So after their secret wedding, Betsy breaks the news to her parents that she is now Betsy Ross, and her parents totally lose their minds.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very bad scene. It's so bad that Betsy completely severs herself from her family and from the Quaker religion.
Wow.
Clean break. All done.
She gets a new religion, and that religion is Huggin. America.
Oh, yes.
I'm skipping ahead. I'm skipping. I recognize the name. I know who this one is.
That might be her second marriage that doesn't exist yet, America. So,
well, she has to create it, right?
I think that's what she does. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's her claim to fame. So Betsy and John, now they're on their own, and they open up their own upholstery business in Philadelphia. So they're still back in town where her family lives. So mm-hmm. they probably see her, because again, there's 9 people in town. So they must see her family all the time, which is going to be real awkward. But they open their own business, and they're really good at it. The business is very successful. And it was even reported that they, in 1774, they made bed hangings for a man named George Washington. They had crossed paths with George several times. George lived in, I think he was in Virginia at this point, and he was head of the Virginia militia, or one of the militias in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
But he belonged to like whatever church, the Christ Church, that the Rosses now belong to. And then sometimes he would come to Philadelphia to like go to that church.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, you're like, sometimes you're like, I'm going to go down the street and go to the other church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See what they have to offer. Yeah.
Yeah. So he just rides for 3 days to go to the other church. Mm-hmm. But he'd be in Philadelphia hanging out, going to church. And they would see him. And he said, you guys are pretty good at this. Can you make bed hangings for me?
Hmm. Bed hangings.
Yeah.
And those are, can you explain what bed hangings are? I
assume that the bed hangings are like the Ebenezer Scrooge bed curtains.
Okay. That's just cloth, though. I don't really know what you need to do about that.
Very easy to do.
It's just
very super easy.
It's just gauze draped over the well, you've got to
cut holes so you can like put rings and stuff on them.
Okay,
I think they're like shower curtains.
Okay, yeah. Back whenever it was improper for anyone to see you sleep, I think. Is that right?
Yeah. I don't know, and it's a good way to hide from ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Which is almost—it's probably actually what they believed back then.
It's like the scariest part of the whole Christmas Carol is whenever he like shudders to things in his bed, and I'm like, dude, that is not what you do. If you have a ghost in the room, you're not like, I know what I'll do. I'm gonna trap myself in a shower curtain around my bed that I can't see through.
I'm gonna let the ghost take run of the entire room, mm-hmm. the entire house, and just do it at once. There, I will close myself here and not be able to see it.
Here, run around the house. Here, run around the bedroom like Chucky for a few minutes, and then just go silent.
And then I won't see it until it's literally 6 inches from my face.
Sure,
and then scream and die. No. If you are gonna be visited by a ghost, I think the move is you go get the fireplace poker.
Yes.
And you stand in the middle of your room and you just swing it around.
Absolutely.
And you just spin in circles with it. That's my move.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't do bed hangings, but George Washington did. He was a different kind of man,
mm-hmm.
as we've discussed in the George Washington episode. So everything's going really well for the Rosses, but in their third year of marriage, the American Revolution breaks out.
Mm.
John does his part. He joins the Pennsylvania Provincial Militia, and his big job is to guard the munitions. He did not do a good job because he died in 1775, and there's no official record of how he died. However, the going theory is that he was killed by a gunpowder explosion.
Oh.
In his own munitions locker.
He's probably like, well, I thought I was supposed to be guarding it from people coming in, not, you know.
I didn't know from like fire coming out.
Exactly. Yeah. That doesn't seem like it's a big deal. I'm also not entirely sure what munitions are. I thought it was a different word for bed hangings. I'm really sorry. I was like, why would you put me in charge of this? Like, why would I be in charge of gunpowder? I just sew things.
So you're setting a lot of fire to his cloth normally.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get that really rugged, like, I don't know, natural look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd singe the edges.
Exactly.
Yeah, and he was trying that out, and didn't go great. His family says now that they say this isn't true. They say it was not that, but they also don't offer any alternative explanation.
Was that like about how he died? like a tragic sewing accident or something? So, I mean, what do they?
I mean, make up something.
Yeah.
It really sounds like they got together, and they're like, okay, listen, we cannot let people know that John blew his own ass off.
conveniently, there's nothing left of John right now. So there's not like a lot to cover up. He is a fine mist drifting out to sea right now.
He's mostly red stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Betsy becomes a 24-year-old widow. Now, she keeps the upholstery shop running on her own.
Mm-hmm.
The war is on. She's doing her part. She's working on uniforms. She's making and mending tents and flags for the Continental Army. She also would stuff paper tube cartridges with musket shot, making prepackaged ammunition.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's pretty brave after what happened to Hubby, but
it's she's really. It's maybe she was didn't want to live anymore. Maybe she didn't want to live without him, and just waiting for the sweet release of death.
Yeah.
We should also note during the war there was a Hessian army fighting on behalf of the British, led by one Colonel Karl von Donop.
Karl von Dollop?
Karl von Donop.
Donop. Okay.
Donut. It's like a donut dollop hybrid.
Like a dollop. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Dollop of a donut.
Got it.
Donop. And Donop was leading his troops toward the Battle of Trenton when he saw, when he said that he was distracted by, quote, a beautiful young widow.
This is how it goes, you know.
You're marching. Man, I've never been more relatable.
Marching through the woods with 10,000 of your boys, looking to start some trouble, and you're like, wait a second, who is that?
Hold on, fellas.
Yeah, I'm going to do some window shopping over here. No, let's not burn it down yet. No, hang on. I got some moves I got to put on here.
I got 900 wingmen, and I'm going to put them to use.
Mm-hmm.
So the aforementioned widow flirts with him for a few hours.
Oh.
And this causes him to miss the battle.
She's going to win this war one flirtatious episode at a time.
The American forces did, in fact, win that Battle of Trenton, and it is considered a major turning of the tide in the war. And it's widely believed they probably would not have won if Colonel von Donop's troops had been there to fight.
Oh, so he's holding his whole troops back with him.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's literally him.
Oh, yeah, you being can't like, go on without me.
Yeah,
hey, guys, just wait.
Hey, just like chill. Yeah. There's like a river over there. Go play in there or something. It's fine.
Yeah.
I gotta see about a thing here, you know?
Yeah. Should we go? We got things to shoot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna shoot some stuff. Yeah. Don't worry. I'm working on it. Just chill out. I want everyone to see this. Hey, everyone.
Look how good I am at this.
Watch me get laid. Come on. So he was not good at it, and then the Americans won the war. And a lot of people think that Betsy Ross was indeed that beautiful young widow who distracted the colonel specifically to keep him away from the war.
Whew.
So she's doing a lot to help the cause.
Mm-hmm.
Then the summer of 1776, George Washington walks back into Betsy's shop. And he says, "You're a beautiful young widow. I'm supposed to be at a war right yeah. now, but..."
"How would you like to bleed me for a few hours? Mm-hmm. I've got this cough that won't go away."
"You want to bleed my black bile?" So he walks into her shop. And now remember, they know each other, right? So she's done work for him before. Mm-hmm. And Washington, he knows she's a really great seamstress. And so he walks in, he pulls a piece of paper from his jacket pocket and he hands it to her. It's a sketch that he had made of a new flag with 13 stripes and 13 six-pointed stars.
Hmm.
So obviously the 13, well, maybe not so obvious yeah. for our friends across the pond. The 13 stars and stripes
I think they know.
They willfully yeah. are ignorant of yeah. this. "Nope, never heard of it before. Fuck off." They represent the 13 American colonies, the originals. But I do have to say, I think about this. For a bunch of people who thought you could bleed away a cold and you could tell if a woman was a witch by setting her on fire and see if she actually burned, I am kind of shocked they weren't too superstitious to put like 13 of something on a flag.
Several times.
Yeah, yeah, over and over again. Maybe they thought it canceled each other out.
Yeah, 13 plus 13 is 26. We don't have 26 of anything, but at least the numbers work out.
I think we're all clear here. So Washington shows her the sketch and asks her what she think, and she looks it over, and she's like, "It's pretty good."
Yeah.
But she has one suggestion.
Hmm.
Six-pointed star, it's a little much.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of gauche.
Yeah. Also, very difficult to sew.
Yes, indeed.
5-point stars. I got a bunch of those sitting in the back. Maybe we make up a story about why 5-pointed stars make more sense.
And she says to him, "What do you think about a 5-pointed star instead?"
Mm-hmm.
Which is like Sean Parker rolling up to Zuckerberg and being yep. like, "I got a huge idea for you."
Yeah.
In the Facebook. Drop the. So the real reason she suggested a 5-point star is indeed that it is way easier to make a 5-pointed star than a 6-pointed star.
Good for her. Good for her. She seems to have a way with convincing men of yeah, things.
Yeah, she sure does. So. Isn't that weird? To really sell this point, she folds a piece of paper into triangles and then supposedly gives it one cut with her scissors,
mm-hmm.
unfolds it, and it's a 5-sided star.
Perfect.
Yeah. George Washington was like, "Holy shit.
You are a incredible. Witch. Burn her.
Make the
flag. Throw her in the river.
Burn her." And she was like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, I've been holding this flag forever. Now you cannot burn the flag. Yeah. I don't know if you know this, but new that's rule. Really disrespectful. New rule. And that is why we can no longer burn the American flag."
New rule. I am base.
Because. Oh, man. So George is in. He is so impressed. He's like, "Absolutely. You know what? 5 stars.
Mm-hmm.
Bingo. You got it." So Betsy gets to work and she creates the first ever American flag. And the flag was so good that America won the war. So that happens eventually. But on June 15th, 1777, the war is obviously still going on.
Mm-hmm.
Betsy marries her second husband, a man named America. a man named Joseph Ashburn. Betsy and Joseph had 2 daughters, and I like that there is a new name in the story. I don't know if you noticed.
Oh.
You haven't heard of a Joseph before?
No.
He's the first one, actually.
Interesting. Wow.
In history.
It was just him.
Just him. They went back and they liked it so much. Like, that's such a good name. They went back and they did a find replace yep. in the Bible. They switched out and they made a new
F,
Joseph.
Control R, Control F, Control R. Interesting.
Now Bertram is Joseph. That's mm-hmm. the father of Jesus. So they had 2 daughters, though their first daughter did die at 9 months old.
Oh.
Which is obviously very tragic. The second one lived. She lived to be quite older. Now, Ashburn was a merchant sailor, which I'm pretty sure is basically a wartime boat captain for hire.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not officially, I think they're typically not like formally part of the Navy.
Mm-hmm. But like they get, you know, they got kind of like a license to do whatever they need to do.
Yeah. It sounds like a pretty sweet gig.
Yeah.
Like, people who are signing up for the Navy, they don't get paid to do that. Yeah. Or they get paid very little. This guy is making bank.
And in fact, if they do some of those, you know, things, they get in trouble for it. But this guy, hey, I do what I got to do, and I get paid for it.
I'm a rogue.
Yeah.
In the job description. So he's a merchant sailor, and he's fighting the good fight. But in 1781, a British warship captures Joseph's ship. Joseph is arrested. He's charged with treason. And because he is British, of course, he's not British. He's of British lineage. I mean, he's in the colony. So I guess technically he's British.
Yeah.
Everyone there is British.
Yeah.
I think he was born in the New World, but doesn't matter. He's charged with treason and he is sent to Old Mill Prison in Plymouth, England. Oh. And he's there for about a year, but he dies in May of 1782.
Oh,
so he's off the map. Mm-hmm. Betsy finds out about Joseph dying because a man named John Claypool. See? Yep, we're back. We're back, baby. A man named John Claypool had been imprisoned with Joseph, and when Claypool was released, he tracked Betsy down to tell her the news that her husband was dead.
Oh, okay, that's nice.
Because no one else was going to reach out to her.
Yeah.
Betsy and Claypool become friends.
Uh-oh.
And the next year... they are married.
Does anybody besides Claypool have evidence that this guy died?
This is the story of that Sotheby. What's the name of that movie? Jodie Foster, Richard Gere movie. Summersby.
Mm.
You ever see the movie Summersby?
No idea.
It's sort of like that. Guy goes away to the Civil War. And he comes back, everyone thinks he's dead. He comes back. He's like, it's me, Mr. Summersby. Whatever his name is, Richard Gere. And he's like, it's me, Summersby. And everyone's like, I don't think you are. And he's like, no, I am. And they ask him questions about only things that only Summersby would know. And he's like, and he has perfect answers. And they're like, okay, you are Summersby. But his wife is Jodie Foster. And Jodie Foster is like, you're not him, but right. I'm going to let this play out because you are Richard Gere and you are real foxy.
And my husband, you're clearly impersonating. Not so Richard Gere. You know what I mean?
No, no. That's another reason why the people in the town weren't really buying it. Yeah. Last one was more of a John Leguizamo type, but you. Oh, a little different. But yeah, I think in that movie, he gets to know Summersby's story because they're in prison together. So right. I have a hunch. That old Joseph is in,
yeah.
With Mr. Claypool and tell him, oh man, I can't wait to get back to my smoking hot wife. She is so hot. Let me draw you a picture. And he takes out a stick and he's drawing in the dirt. And the guy's like, holy shit. That is
hold on. I'll be right back. Give me like 5 minutes.
Can you just close your eyes and your ears?
Yeah.
It's a small cell. So next year they are married. And this marriage lasts a pretty long time. They're married for 34 years.
Wow. Whew.
So this one takes. Over this course of this time, obviously America wins the war, and life just kind of gets going. Betsy and Claypool have 5 children together. Either 5 who lived or 5 total, and not all of them lived.
Wow.
But eventually Claypool, he did get sick and he died in 1817, which is a good long time.
Good run. Yeah.
Betsy continues to work in the shop the whole time they're together. She's still working in her upholsterer shop. She doesn't retire until she's 76 years old. By 1833, she had gone completely blind. Definitely couldn't work anymore. And then on January 30th, 1836, Betsy Ross died peacefully in her sleep just a few weeks before her 84th birthday.
Wow.
That's a hell of an age for 1836.
Yeah. You know how many people struggle to get to 80 nowadays?
She's doing great.
She just, wow. Good for her.
Mm-hmm. Now, she was first interred at the Free Quaker Burial Grounds in Philadelphia, which I imagine must have really infuriated her since she had not been. I don't know.
She's
I don't
pretty
know
how that dead story at that went, point. But, so, yeah. But yeah. Even so.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's a good point. But in 1856, her remains were moved to the Mount Moriah Cemetery. The practice of cemeteries purchasing the remains of famous historical individuals was apparently pretty common in order to drive additional business.
I love this. Why do we not do this more often?
I know. We're going to buy Betsy Ross because if we, hey, yeah. if we get a Betsy Ross, holy God, people are going to be buying plots in here like crazy. It's so good.
Put it right over there between Tupac and Biggie, and we've got.
Oh, man. So later, the Daughters of the American Revolution install a flagpole at her grave. And I will show you what that looks like here, if I can get this to work. There it goes. Here is her grave with the flagpole.
Oh, okay. That's a flagpole.
It is it's a tall flagpole. I don't see a gravestone.
No, the grave looks like it is, I mean, it hasn't been like taken care of at all in a few years.
It looks
years.
Like lots of weeds.
A little overgrown, let's say.
It looks like there's, this maybe has been mowed recently.
Yeah.
But this not so much.
Yeah. I think all the money went into the flagpole fund. A lot went into the landscaping fund.
There's not enough left for scissors.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. That's Betsy's grave. Where did my notes go? Let's see. So she was laid to rest. Unfortunately, the trauma of losing two husbands and several children seems to have locked her spirit to her old house in Philadelphia.
Ooh, okay.
She is often seen wandering the halls looking very sad. Sometimes visitors find her weeping quietly on her bed. And they also sometimes hear the sound of a woman crying in one of the small bedrooms in the house, which would certainly have been one of the children's rooms. So the ghost of Betsy Ross is still there, and she is still grieving. Isn't that sad?
That's pretty sad.
It's not fun.
She did so much, sewing-wise.
Yeah. Yeah. She sure did.
You know, distracting our enemies with playful banter.
Yeah. And wiles-wise. Yeah, womanly wiles-wise. Yeah. She was
wiles
so good.
Oh, man. Wiles and sewing.
She's real blessed there. Less so with survival of family members. She's there. There's also a second spirit in the Betsy Ross house. It's a man who speaks frantically in the basement.
Okay, sure.
There are two theories about who that ghost might be. Theory number one is that it's the ghost of Charles H. Weisberger, who founded the Ross Memorial. Which, sure, but my favorite is theory number two, which is it's the tortured soul of a gift shop employee who was murdered about 20 years ago in a robbery.
Wait, somebody got murdered robbing the Betsy Ross gift shop?
Well, the person, yeah, someone broke in.
Right, yeah.
Like, give me all the flag pins.
Yeah.
give me all the coffee mugs with the flag on them. I need them. And the employee's like, what are you doing? He's like, fuck you. Boom.
This makes the drill tweet so much sadder. I'm sorry. The drill tweet about.
You're going to have to be more specific.
There's a drill tweet about, it says, he claims he's working at the Betsy Ross Museum, and he says, buddy, they won't even let me fuck the flag.
Oh, drill, you national treasure.
So anyway, less funny now that I know there was murder behind it. But anyway.
Sure. Look, when you really want to fuck a flag, you know, nothing's going to stand in your way. Certainly not a gift shop employee. So that's probably the second ghost there. And if you want to go visit the ghost of Betsy Ross and the ghost of a gift shop employee who did not let a robber fuck a flag, then you can go to Philadelphia. It's at 239 Arch Street in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Betsy Ross home. What do you think? That was kind of a sexy, sad one, huh?
Yeah. A little of both.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame she had such a sad life, although really, I don't know. Sounds like she had a lot of quiet time as well.
Says a man who just spent several days away from his children and has now been thrust back into that madness.
Oh, man. Can you imagine how quiet her house was for decades at a time?
Do you imagine how many days she slept until at least 7 a.m.? Oh my God. Just sit there all alone. Mm-hmm. fucking whatever flags you want.
Sewing, drinking coffee.
Oh, it does sound nice. Well, if any of our children ever go missing, this episode is going to come back to bite us in the ass, huh? And that is, I guess, the story of the Betsy Ross house and the ghost of our good friend Betsy Ross, who made the flag. If you like this show, you should tell your friends. We would love that. We love when more people listen. And you can go, if you go tell like five people, listen to this show. Unless they really like their children, yeah. They might not like this episode as much as a different one. So maybe
really
pick a
like
different
the
one.
Flag. You know, we made a lot of jokes about that too. So,
yeah, you know what? So maybe, I don't know, depending, just use your best judgment. Maybe wait till next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Be real careful. That's our story for this week. All the notes were taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were from Patrick Dean. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our social media manager is Kai Valonis. If you like what we do here also, you know, you can always join Ghost Plus. We have a whole lot of extra content over there now. The stuff this month includes another ghostie from Pat and me, which the Bordello House is up, and I think Devil's Gate is coming up later this month.
Mm-hmm.
Both fun and disappointing in their own ways. Ryan and I had a really good Smith show on, gosh, what was it? This week that came out. The plan to blow up the moon.
Mm.
That was a good one. And then we got a couple other fun, spooky Halloween things coming up. So that plus all the content from months ago, it's great. Go check it out. Isthisghost.com. Click on Ghost Plus and you're going to really like it. It's good for you. It's good for the world and the planet probably. And that really will do it for us tonight. Thank you so much for listening. And if you learn to sew, then maybe don't do flags, because people will be real weird about them. And then you're gonna end up being the next topic on Is This a Ghost?